Good morning.
Good morning, Sensei.
Last week I wasn't here because, along with Sensei Cicchetti, I was up at the Garrison Institute, and we had a five-day sesshin. Has anybody here ever been to Garrison? It's a beautiful place. You go up 287, and I think it's the Palisades Parkway. But anyway, you wind up going across the Bear Mountain Bridge, making a left and driving for a couple of miles, and there on the left is the Garrison Institute. It's right across from the Hudson River from West Point. And I think, I'm not sure of this, but I think it used to be a Catholic monastery, and it's been totally renovated. It's beautiful. Beautiful wood floors and tile floors, the bathrooms and showers and everything are all brand new. Huge kitchen, gigantic meditation hall with other meditation halls as well. And the food, especially if you're a vegetarian, is fabulous, really excellent. I think even if you're not vegetarian, you can't not enjoy the food. The food was really wonderful. I guess we started on Wednesday afternoon. And by Thursday midday, we were snowed in. You literally could not get out. And it was stunningly beautiful. You know, it's in the woods. It's up on top of the Hudson River. Really ideal for sitting, ideal for a retreat. We had about, ultimately, when everybody got there, I guess about 20-some-odd people. And the sitting was very strong and very intimate. I guess you could say a good time was had by all. If you ever have an opportunity, they do all sorts of things. Krishna Das appears there a lot. A lot of the well-known people in the world of Buddhism are there for various reasons, lectures and stuff. Take the opportunity and go up there. It's beautiful. I can't imagine what it's like in the springtime and the summer when you can actually, we really couldn't do too much walking around on the trails and stuff because it's so much snow. So, you know, the daily schedule, so I think we started around 7 in the morning or 6:30, but there were two or three meditation periods after waking up in the morning. And then there was breakfast. And then there was a short break, and then after breakfast we sat until about 10 or so, took another short break, and then sat to lunch. And then after lunch we sat, and then later in the afternoon there was another break, and then supper, and then we sat later in the evening. And I think it was probably around 10 to 12 hours of sitting a day, sitting and also kinhin, much of which was outside with the snow blowing in your face. So it was really it was a lovely retreat. Personally, for me, I've been so busy lately, it was really nice to get away and just do some, just sit. So one of the things that happens, we do it here sometimes, but every evening we chant the evening gatha, which I think most of you are familiar with. Now I'm going to chant it, and I know as soon as I do this I'm going to forget the words. But it's, let me respectfully remind you, life and death are of supreme importance. Time passes swiftly by and opportunity is lost. Each of us must strive to awaken, awaken. Take heed. Do not squander your life. Now, when you do that chant after 10 hours of sitting, you rise a few inches above your cushion. It really brings attention, for me anyway, just how, what a gift life is and how fragile it is. A good friend of mine, a longtime friend since college, his mother died at age 94, and he asked me, and I've never done this, you know, I'm a lay Zen teacher, so I don't know a lot about conducting weddings and services and stuff. I've been trained in that way. But he asked me if I would officiate at the funeral, which I did yesterday. So, of course, this chanting that sutra at the retreat last week, I was thinking about the fragility or relationship, I guess, too, between life and death. And I think when someone dies, we become confronted by a basic fact, and that is that life is ephemeral, that things constantly change, and nothing stays the same. and how so hard we fight against that sometimes. You know, we want to have that sense of being in control, having some sense of order. But that's really not what life is. Zen master and poet Shin Sui, who died on September 9th, 1769, wrote a haiku just before his death. Like dewdrops on a lotus leaf, I vanish. Writing some haiku myself and loving haiku, this is a beautiful haiku. And when I hear these words, like dewdrops on a lotus leaf, I vanish. The image that gets created for me is encountering a lotus leaf with dewdrops on it early in the morning, knowing that the sun is already coming up, and feeling in my body how the sun is warming the day, and also that sun, that warmth, is slowly evaporating these dewdrops until, poof, they're gone. Just like life. But they're gone simply and without fanfare. Now, Zen does not push away death, nor does it romanticize it. And by romanticize, I mean, you know, a lot of the Buddhist traditions, there are all sorts of stories and myths about the different levels of heaven and hell and you know, what happens when you go and all of that. Zen is much more simple, much more basic than, say, Tibetan Buddhism. From a Zen point of view, life and death are just a natural part of the order of things. Zen master Kozan showed how to accept death simply and as a fact of life. A few days before he died, he called all his students together. Now you have to imagine this big monastery. He calls all his students together. And he directs them to bury him without ceremony. The following morning, Kozan wrote a poem, which I believe I've read before. Empty-handed I enter the world, barefoot I leave it. My coming, my going, two simple happenings that got entangled. And when he finished this poem, Kozan put down his brush and died while sitting upright on his meditation cushion. The way that Kozan simply accepted death as a part of his life, to me, is both touching and beautiful. He didn't cling to life while pushing away death. He merely passed on when it was time. Interestingly, sometimes I think we think that, well, these are the Zen masters back in those days when all this kind of stuff happened. But my friend CJ, his mother, who was sort of like my adopted mother when we were in college, I used to hang out a lot with her. She's a really sweet woman. You could talk to her about anything, anytime. Very adventuresome soul. And I used to love, as a college student, to sit in the kitchen and listen to the radio. I don't know if anybody remembers what those are, but the radio in the kitchen. And then she had a number of people that she listened to that she enjoyed greatly. And then we would talk, whether it was about politics or science or whatever. She was 94 when she died. This happened, a week ago. Her family, she's got a son and two daughters and, I think, 13 grandchildren. They were going to have a 94th birthday party for her, but there was a snowfall, so the party was postponed until Sunday. So there was this big party for her. CJ was telling me they have it on video of her blowing out the 94 candles. And also, rumor has it that she also ate a piece of cake. So that was Sunday. And then Sunday night, she went to sleep, and CJ was, my friend, was staying there with her. She fell asleep in the chair watching TV that night. And so rather than get her up and bring her to bed, because a lot of times she slept in the chair, he just turned down the sound. And then somewhere in the middle of the night, he heard her get up. He heard the sound come back on, and then he heard her get up and go into the bathroom. And she didn't come out of the bathroom for a while, so he called out, and she didn't respond. So he went to the bathroom, and he found her, as Kozan, sitting upright on the toilet. And she had died. And it's funny, the people that I've told this story to about, 94, dying right after this big celebration for her. You know, they all say the same thing. Where do I sign up? You know, somebody's mother dies, but, and CJ certainly appreciated this as well, what a beautiful way to die. So having this kind of relationship to life and death, where it's accepted as just part of the natural order of things, having its place with so many other aspects of life, does not mean, however, that we don't or shouldn't grieve. Bernie Glassman, who I know, lost his wife, lost Jishu to cancer. And one of his students saw him crying, and she said to him, "Sensei," this is back when he was still a sensei for Roshi, "Sensei, I thought that you taught us that death is a natural part of life. Why are you crying?" And Bernie replied, "It's true. Death is a natural part of life. But it is also true that I miss Jishu very much." So they're not mutually exclusive. So let's work together not to squander our lives. Thank you.